Here's the 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He chased the high heat, and JV gets his first strikeout. And again, the 1-2. Swing and a miss. He struck him out.
Best fastball of the afternoon thrown by Justin Verlander at 96 miles an hour.
Outstanding effort tonight for Justin Verlander. Swing and a miss, and Verlander will dust him for his third strikeout of the game. Only Mickey Lolich in the history of the Tigers has had 2,000 or more. Here's the 1-2, swing and a miss.
There it is.
He struck him out. Strikeout number 2,000 in the career of Justin Verlander.
Here's the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out to end the game. Carlos Carrasco with his third career shutout, his seventh career complete game. All of them have come on the road, and he was dominant here today.
Man, he pitched his heart out. I mean, that's a good lineup, and he really pitched well. Now that he's got some starts under him, and he's got some repetition, you know, it's kind of nice because he doesn't have the wear and tear of, you know, some of the other guys.
Tom Brady will no longer proceed in the legal process in Deflategate. Announced on his Facebook page today that while he is grateful for the support from everyone, from Coach Belichick to the fans, the 18 months have been difficult and they are coming to an end. Brady wrote, "I'm going to work hard to be the best player I can be for the New England Patriots. And I look forward to having the opportunity to return to the field this fall." So what does this mean? The Cleveland Browns better watch out for the return of the GOAT on October 9th.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, how about that? Is that not just an absolutely perfect scenario? Tom Brady gives up his suspension, essentially now forced to sit four long games that he should not have to sit, and then he's going to come back and take his frustrations and anger out on whom? On the Cleveland Browns. Welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, live once again from Highland Meadows here in Sylvania and the Marathon Classic. It is a great day for golf out here at the LPGA event. Having a very, very good time as always, watching the ladies hit some shots, coming in here and talking to some folks. Once again, have to say thank you to the outstanding hosts here at the Classic. The people here have just been top of the line for the media, for the players, for the fans, the gallery. It is just an amazing event. I want to say thanks to 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning and Ben Franklin Plumbing as well for bringing you the extravaganza live from the media tent here at Highland Meadows. It is a great, great day, and we're going to continue to give you coverage of the leaderboard. Jim Cushnell will be doing that during the top and the bottom of the hour sports centers, and of course we're also keeping our eye on the golf event, little small thing happening out on the other side of the pond at the British Open. We'll give you an update on that as well. But we have a lot of great stuff going on here as we broadcast live from Sylvania at Highland Meadows. Coming up on the extravaganza today, a lot of different things. We're going to talk with Zach Meisel here in just a few minutes as we get you started with baseball. Yesterday we talked a little bit about the start of the second half and what kind of predictions we have. Already, though, those things get thrown into a blender and all kind of mixed up and then spit back out again after July 31st once the trade deadline comes and goes. The way teams look now may or may not be when we're making these predictions as far as the second half, what teams we actually are predicting. So we may have to change everything again in just a couple of weeks. We're going to do a little Major League Baseball second half preview with Zach Meisel here in just a few. And also coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Jim Heller, who is the media chairman here at the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows. He's doing just an outstanding job providing us with everything that we need. And we're going to talk about that this particular tournament, maybe a little more golf in general. And then at 4:35, Rachel Lindsay of the Toledo Blade will join us to talk also. She's covering the event here, but also to talk about the Big Ten football season upcoming, Big Ten Media Day, just a few days away as well. Next week, so we're going to talk to Rachel Lindsay. She is the Michigan Wolverines beat writer for the Blade, and we'll get into that with her. So a lot to talk about. Tom Brady gives up his legal fight, will not go to the Supreme Court over inflated footballs, which is a good call. It's just ridiculous that it is where it is. It's ridiculous that it lasted 544 days. It's ridiculous that Roger Goodell, who cannot find a way to discipline players who batter women for more than 4 games, can give four games to Tom Brady for allegedly, with still no actual firm definitive. I feel like I'm losing my connection here. I'm cutting out on my own end. First, no proof that he asked for it to be done by the equipment managers, if it was done. And second of all, that it means one hill of beans in terms of his greatness or his performance. But there will be those who say that this puts the official tarnish, if you want to call it that, on the Tom Brady legacy. Accepting the punishment means, they will say, the Brady haters. And I kind of have been one of them. I've not been a Patriots fan. Obviously, I can't stand them. I haven't hated Brady, but at any rate, those who do are going to say this puts official tarnish on it because he's accepting punishment. That means he accepts blame and admits guilt. I don't think it does, especially after 544 days. But we'll get into that a little bit. Also, the big news in the NFL right now, the Broncos finally caved in and gave Von Miller the richest contract in history. They're going to give him $70 million guaranteed dollars, something they had to do. Peyton Manning is gone. Paxton Lynch is the QB of the future. Mark Sanchez is apparently the QB of the present. You think their defense is going to be very important? You had to give the NFL's best pass rusher and obviously the dominant Super Bowl MVP, whatever it was, going to take to get him to re-sign. That defense is going to make or break your Denver Broncos or their Denver Broncos season. By the way, one other thought on that before we go to Zach Meisel. I understand he is ready and we'll talk a little baseball. What is amazing is what many of the NFL players were tweeting about during the NBA's ridiculous free agent frenzy and this free agent free-for-all with all of the money they were throwing around. To give you an idea, Von Miller's $70 million guaranteed dollars is less than half of Mike Conley's guaranteed money that he just signed, the richest contract in the history of the NBA. And oh, by the way, that's Mike Conley. That's Mike Conley, a top 40 player in the NBA. Von Miller, best pass rusher, maybe most dominant defensive player, not named J.J. Watt, maybe most dominant defensive player, period, in the National Football League. Whose job is harder? Who's better at it? He gets $70 million guaranteed. Conley gets $153. And if you're looking for a little bit more context there, let me offer it this way. Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, a record-setting $70 million guaranteed as part of his richest contract ever, is only $6 million more than Timo Mozgov got from the Los Angeles Lakers. Just to throw it out there for you. I won't even go into baseball and the richest contract ever there, Giancarlo Stanton, at his $325 million guaranteed dollars, which apparently earned by 61 batting practice home runs on Monday night out at Petco Field in San Diego. All right, that's my transition. That's what we call a transition. If you want to call it a segue, we can do that too, to baseball. Zach Meisel covering the Cleveland Indians out there for the Northeast Ohio Media Group is what I'm trying to say. And he joins us now here in Northwest Ohio in Sylvania at Highland Meadows for a little second half Major League Baseball preview. Zach, how are you, sir?
Not bad. I'm kind of wishing my basketball career wouldn't have ended in sixth grade.
Zach, I hate to interrupt, but I'm going to have to interrupt because I couldn't hear a word you just said. Jim, I don't know if there's something you can do, but I'm unable to hear Mr. Meisel with the current setup that we have. So, Zach, we're going to try that again. Can you hear me, Zach? Can you give me a check here, bud?
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, good. Now I got you better, too. Okay, thank you. Anyway, so I didn't hear what your response was, but go ahead and give me your response anyway. Give it to us again. When you look at the money that Major League Baseball players are able to guarantee, I'm sorry, teams are able to guarantee for their players, and obviously we all just watch the NBA, you look at Von Miller, oh my God, an NFL record, $70 million guaranteed dollars. I mean, literally, that's the couch cushion money that NBA and Major League Baseball players especially lose from day to day.
Well, to any new parents, the second you have that kid, you put a baseball in the left hand and a basketball in the right hand, and maybe put a putter nearby. And I think that's you got to start them young. It's amazing. I remember when it was unheard of to think of a $100 million deal, something over 7 or 8 years, and now that's what like an average player gets in baseball. It's ridiculous. But that's the market we live in, and that's what these players are worth, it seems. And teams in any of the sports, they're okay with dealing with the ramifications down the road, knowing that it's very rare to have any athlete live up to an 8 or 9 year, nine-figure contract.
Yeah, that is a great point. And you're right, you do want to start them young. If you've got the athletic talent of any kind, make sure that it's in one of those first two sports, because you're never going to earn quite as much as you can in the other ones. But that's a conversation for another day. I want to talk about the second half of the season, which, of course, gets started tonight. Second half begins in the American League Central with a couple of interdivisional battles. Royals are going to be at the Tigers tonight. Indians are going to be at the Twins. We played a little montage there at the top of the show, Zach, and I don't know if you were on the line in time to hear it or not, but featuring Justin Verlander of the Tigers and then Carlos Carrasco, who will go tonight for the Indians in Minnesota. Is that essentially what this comes down to in this division in the second half? And again, keeping in mind what I said as I introduced this segment, that you know, things may change greatly between now and the deadline. But is that what it comes down to, the arms that the Indians will throw to try to keep a 6.5-game lead throughout the next couple of months versus the arms that the second-place Tigers or second-place Royals can throw in an attempt to win games and catch up?
I think so. I think with the Indians, we saw, I mean, they're not going to win 14 games in a row again, but you saw what the ceiling is.
Way to take the suspense out of it for us.
Yeah, but we saw what their peak is. We saw what they're capable of when they're firing on all cylinders. And you're not going to fire on all cylinders too often, but if they can get the kind of pitching that they've gotten for the first 3 or 4 months, then they're going to be really tough to take out of that top spot in the division. And I think the other teams are looking up thinking, how are we going to catch up to them when every single night they've got a starting pitcher out there who's going to throw quality innings? So it's a challenge, and it'll be interesting to see the way the schedule's set up. The Indians closed the year with 23 straight games in the division. They've got a chance here with the Royals and Tigers playing each other. The Indians, after Minnesota, they go to Kansas City. So there's a chance to put some distance in between. And you know, maybe they can either extend that lead, or maybe this is a chance for Kansas City and Detroit to close the gap.
You know, I was talking yesterday about this and, you know, kind of previewing it a little bit the way we are right now about the American League Central. We want to get as many viewpoints on this as possible. I feel like the pitching can hold up and be, if not as good as it was in the first half for the first-place Indians, or at least close enough to it to be the team to beat in this division and to hold everybody off, the Tigers, Twins, Tigers, White Sox, Royals. But I don't feel as confident, and maybe I shouldn't, but I don't feel as confident about the offense being able to produce, the lineup being able to produce as many runs as it did in the first half. I feel like they played over their heads. I feel like some young guys who are, you know, maybe not really aware of the moment yet will become aware of it once we hit August. We'll become certainly more aware once we're in September and things start to get real, if you will, and that these guys just might not be ready for prime time from that standpoint. So the pitching will be, you know, fantastic, but you got to scratch out enough in order for that to stand up. And I just feel like that might be the biggest concern, if there is one, and maybe the biggest downfall, ultimately, if they're not able to do it.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking the same thing for a while. I've been waiting for this offense to just hit a wall, fall off a cliff, go through a long extended slump, and see if the Indians could still grind out victories with their pitching when that happens. But it hasn't happened yet, and they're going to get Michael Brantley back at some point. I don't think Yan Gomes is going to hit 160 all year. They can get more production from Jason Kipnis and from some of the guys on the bench. I mean, it's not like this offense is doing unimaginable things 1 through 9, and it's just a complete powerhouse murderer's row. It's been pretty balanced, and I think guys have kind of done what the Indians were hoping they would do, and I think there is still room for improvement. Now, certainly, Jose Ramirez might hit a rough patch because he's played more than he's ever played. Tyler Naquin isn't going to slug 600. Lonnie Chisenhall will fall back to earth. But there is still room for improvement, especially if they go out and add a bat, too. And with what you said, I mean, with the moment, I kind of agree. I'm waiting to see how this team is going to embrace the challenge of playing from ahead and knowing that if they handle their own business, they really control their own destiny. And I think it'll be interesting to see the pitchers really embrace that and go out and try to win games that, with that mindset. But keep in mind, it was only 3 years ago when you had Jose Ramirez and Jason Kipnis and some of these other guys contributing down the stretch, and the Indians, I think they went 21-6 in September to secure a wild card spot. So it's not the same situation, but they've had, some of these guys have had this situation before, and they fared pretty well.
Zach Meisel is our guest. We're talking a little Major League Baseball, American League Central style, as the second half gets underway tonight, all across the majors. Zach, Jim wants to talk a little bit about the Tigers, but before we do, you mentioned Yan Gomes and going to hit 160. What, I don't know what he's going to hit. I don't know how he's going to hit. I don't know when he's going to hit. I don't know what he's doing up there. He is not the guy, of course, who seized the full-time catcher's job 2 years ago. What is going on? How come this guy who is such a, you know, not just a really, really solid hitter, but a really clutch hitter for, you know, the better part of the last 2 years. What happened? What is going on with him?
It's a typical snowball effect where he starts off slow and tries to get out of it by doing it all at once and knowing that, hey, a couple 4-for-4 games and he's right back in it. And it just compounded on him. And I think he is, I think the All-Star break was great for him. He couldn't have been in a worse frame of mind just from the standpoint of being lost and losing all confidence at the plate and pretty much just coming to terms with anything he can provide on offense is a bonus because his job is to handle the pitching staff, throw runners out, and do the things behind the plate instead of at the plate. And so, yeah, I don't, there's no guarantee he's going to turn it around. Odds are that when he, you know, he's got one of the worst batting averages and balls in play in the league. And that says that not only has he been terrible, but he's had terrible luck. And that, there is a law of averages there. There's no guarantee it will turn around, but it should turn around some. And I really think it's the kind of thing, if he just sees a few balls get by some defenders, if he hits a couple over the fence, it can work in reverse too. And maybe he gets hot down the stretch. But of course, there's no guarantee that happens. There's no guarantee he makes the necessary tweaks at the plate to get going. But I think if you were putting money on it, you'd probably bet that he wouldn't end the season with a 166 average, with a 69-9 strikeout to walk ratio. I mean, the numbers are brutal. He sees them every time he goes to the plate and looks at the scoreboard. And eventually you would think that a guy with his track record would fare a little better.
Yeah, that's what makes it so hard. Excuse me. Yeah, that's what makes it so hard, Zach, is that this guy has proven he can do this before. He has proven he can hit. He can be a solid hitter for average, for some power, drive some runs in. Nobody's saying he has to be a Silver Slugger Award winner, but my goodness, this is strange what he's going through right now. Jim Cushing, go ahead.
You know, and real quick, just on Yan Gomes there, too. Yeah, I'm wondering what it's going to be because you're right, Zach. He's had the track record. He's definitely a better hitter than this. And selfishly, I just re-signed him this past offseason to a long-term deal on my fantasy league, so on two fronts, as an Indians fan and as a fantasy guy, he's been burning me. But I had a couple things, but before I get to where the kind of the Tigers fit in all this, because I kind of feel, I think, Bob, if I'm not mistaken, you agree with me that the Tigers may be the Indians' best challenge in this division. But before that, I wanted to ask you about quote-unquote adding a bat. This is something we've heard from this team, really not just right now, but the last couple of trade deadline times. Oh, this is a team that still could use an extra bat. I'm getting the impression and feeling like I'm hearing grumblings that they're going to view Michael Brantley coming back as adding that bat. So if they're going to take that mindset, what type of move should we expect the Indians to make here in these? Because we only got about 2 weeks now until the deadline.
Oh, it's going to be bullpen, first, second, third, maybe. I mean, they have Cody Allen, Brian Shaw, Dan Otero, and Jeff Manship. And those are four arms that they trust the first two guys implicitly, and they trust the other two guys a little bit. And that's it. Anyone else is replaceable. They sent TJ House down. They're at a seven-man bullpen right now. We know Terry Francona doesn't feel comfortable until that's closer to double digits. And it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they're going to add an arm. It wouldn't surprise me if it was two arms. I wouldn't be shocked if it was three arms. I think they need bullpen help. They need guys who are battle-tested, who Francona doesn't have to take several months to gain their trust. And I think that's first and foremost. And it's the easiest thing to add this time of year, too. And you can add it even after the August 1st trade deadline, when you can get a guy off of waivers in August. So that's going to be their first thing to address. And with the bat, you have to keep in mind anyone you add you're replacing someone else. So are you going to take a bats away from Naquin or Chisenhall or Davis, who have all performed really well lately? No, you're not going to take away at bats from Ramirez. You'll probably slide him to third base, and maybe Juan Uribe loses some playing time. The only position that would make sense from just an offensive standpoint would be catcher, just because of how putrid Yan Gomes has been. But really, if you're going to add an everyday player to play left field or center field or third base, you're going to replace someone who deserves to be in the lineup most days anyway. So I think they like Brantley coming back. You can platoon Davis and Chisenhall and Naquin in the other two spots. And it wouldn't surprise me to see them add someone like a Danny Valencia, who can hit lefties really well, as another platoon option. But I don't think they're going to go out and get that big bat that everyone's been clamoring for years. And frankly, you look at their team numbers, I don't know that they need to.
Who are they willing to part with to get this bullpen help or this extra piece of the lineup, even if it's not one of the big bats that you reference? Who are they willing to part with?
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting thing. They really don't want to move Brantley Zimmer or Clint Frazier, their top two outfield prospects. And it shouldn't, I mean, there are maybe only one or two, maybe three guys on the market or who might be on the market who would cost those pieces anyway. But they have depth in the farm system for the first time in like 20 years. And I know John Hart used it in ways that a lot of fans disagreed with, like trading Brian Giles for Ricardo Rincon. And so I don't think you're going to see the Indians trade Brantley Zimmer for, you know, a left-handed specialist. But I really think anyone else is fair game. It just depends what they get. And if they could get someone signed cheap for multiple years, I think they'd be willing to move someone who isn't at the top of their prospect list, but also isn't too far down.
We're talking Major League Baseball with Zach Meisel here to start the afternoon. We are live at Highland Meadows for the Marathon Classic, or at least I am. Jim Kushlin is holding down the fort back at Studio Central. Zach joining us from Cleveland, Ohio. Indians are at Minnesota tonight to start the season. The Royals are hosting, or excuse me, the Tigers are hosting the Kansas City Royals. Who's the bigger threat there, Zach? Jim brought it up a moment ago, and he and I kind of agree that, although the pitching rotation with the injuries, of course, particularly to Jordan Zimmerman, but also to Norris, this is, and then Anibal Sanchez being just kind of a train wreck. I don't know, Jim, if we can say that for very long, but we kind of feel like the Tigers' batting order makes them a bigger threat to catch the Indians than anybody else. But those two teams, Royals and Tigers, one of them is probably the bigger threat. Who is it?
I'll say the Tigers. I don't see Kansas City as the type of team that can put together the streak necessary to either catch the Indians or make a serious run at a wild card spot. You're going to have a really good month or a really good stretch. And maybe the Tigers' offense gets hot, and maybe they get some guys healthy in the rotation, and they can rattle off something like 12 or 13, something like that. And I don't know if the Royals can do that. They've got some injuries. The rotation has just, I mean, the Tigers' rotation hasn't been good, but the Royals' rotation has been pretty healthy and is still bad. The Tigers' bats, they're always going to be scary. I don't understand how the Indians are 11-1 against them this year. And, you know, maybe that evens out over time. Maybe the Tigers play better against the Royals. The division has been really weird this year with AL Central teams against each other. But the Tigers are always going to be that team that other teams fear is going to make a move at the deadline too. And they've shown year in and year out they're not afraid to go get a top line pitcher, and granted their farm system isn't overflowing with prospects they can move. But they're always a threat to do that. And they're always gonna have a win now mentality. And the Royals obviously are in win mode too, but it's a little different because they have more holes. They have injuries. They have guys they know they're not getting back this year, so I think the Tigers are a bigger threat, but again, the clock is ticking, and it's going to be interesting when these two teams play each other, because these three teams in the middle here have been clustered together for weeks and weeks now, and no one's really made a move and proven that they are that top threat to the Indians.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, too, Zach, what you just said. The Tigers are always ready and willing to make that move for a big-name guy at the break in order to win right now. But, Jim Kushlin, you pointed this out many times in the last couple weeks we've been talking about this before the deadline. Because they've done it so many times before, they're out. you know, they're out of prospects. The cupboard's bare. You don't have anything to shop with anymore to go to make that big move. You know, at least perceivable, or the way it's being perceived right now, is they don't have the goods that it's going to take to bring anybody who would actually help them catch the Indians.
Yeah, it's funny because they traded David Price last year and they got some of those goods, but those goods aren't ready yet to carry this team, so they are kind of stuck in limbo, and it's not the prototypical buyer's situation, and that they've kind of done this to themselves because of all the moves they've made in the past years, and it never quite paid off.
Yeah, no question about it. And Zach, last thing, and we'll run because we really wanted to focus just on the Central. But looking at the rest of the AL, it's a really great race up there in the East with Baltimore and the Red Sox, and maybe the Blue Jays still as well. Who comes out of that one alive? And do you think that the Rangers are still the best team in the league, in the American League?
I think the Red Sox win the East. They've already been making moves, retooling that roster. The offense is so deep. The lineup is so good. And they've got young kids around David Ortiz. I don't think they'll tire out. Baltimore's pitching is atrocious. It's insane that they're still in first place. Go take a look at Ubaldo Jimenez's numbers and make sure you cover any human children's eyes that are nearby. Texas is tough. They've had some ridiculous injuries again this year. They'll get Yu Darvish back at some point, and he'll help them. But he's also coming off Tommy John surgery, so I don't know how deep into the playoffs so he would be able to pitch. But watch out for Houston. They've been playing a lot better of late, and they did this last year too. And we've said this from the beginning. We kind of mapped it out from the start and said the American League was going to be wide open. And there were teams that it looked like Toronto and Boston and Texas and Houston. It looked like those teams were about, you know, they threatened for October. And they're there, but there's no team that stands out as the absolute best team. I think we can say the Cubs and Giants in the National League for sure, with maybe the Nationals up there. But in the American League, I mean, you could make an argument for six or seven different teams to come out of the American League. So it'll be fun. And the Indians, this is an opportunity that you've got to seize. And you've got the starting pitching. You're really built for October. And for once, you're actually on track to get there in the middle of the season. In the last few years, you haven't been able to say that. So we'll see if they capitalize.
It is going to be a very, very fun second half, which is all I think anybody, at least who has been rooting for the Indians for the last few years, have asked for. Give us something to run at in the second half that isn't going to require a 10-game winning streak to end the season to qualify for a wild card game. You're not going to get too many of those. But it's going to be more interesting, especially after July 31st, when we see who's able to add what in order to, you know, to make their run at this division. Zach, thank you for your analysis. We appreciate it. We look forward to catching up with you again, maybe right after that deadline. Sound all right?
You got it. Always a pleasure.
We appreciate it. Thank you, Zach. There you go. Zach Meisel joining us. Talking a little bit about baseball to start the second half tonight. The Tigers are hosting the Royals. The Twins are hosting the Indians. So that's kind of where it is as far as the interdivision matchups go. The White Sox, I don't even know where the White Sox are tonight because I've only been focusing on the Tigers and the Indians. But it doesn't matter, at least to me. These are the two teams and the two games that we're most concerned about right now. All right, so what we're going to do is take a time out here, bottom of the hour, Sports Center. Don't forget, we're going to talk more about the actual LPGA Tour. We're going to talk more about the actual Marathon Classic, where we are right now. At about 4:05, we're going to talk to Jim Heller, who is the media chairman here at the Marathon Classic. So we're going to talk to him. We're going to talk to Rachel Lindsay of The Blade, who is here covering the Classics. We're going to talk about that. But we're also going to talk about Big Ten football with her, too, as she is the University of Michigan football and basketball beat writer. And Big Ten Media Day is coming up very shortly as well. So that'll be at about 4:35. In between now and then, we'd love to get to your phone calls at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. As we continue live here from the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows in Sylvania, brought to you by 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning and Ben Franklin Plumbing on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Back indeed at 3:41. We are live once again here in Sylvania at Highland Meadows and the Marathon Classic, which is brought to us by, brought to you by, I should say, we are brought to you by Ben Franklin Plumbing and 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning. And Just an amazing day today for round number two. Perfect weather. I don't think it could be really any better. Yesterday, I would say the same thing. We had a bunch of high 90 temperatures or mid-90 temperatures early in the week. But since the actual tournament got started yesterday and today, it could not be any better. And joining us now here in the media tent at the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows is Mary Beck Flinch, or Gwynn, excuse me. She is with Ben Franklin Plumbing, 1 hour heating and air conditioning. And first of all, thank you so much for helping us to get out here to be able to broadcast from this great event, Mary Beck. Are you enjoying the week?
Well, it's a pleasure to be out here. You know, one of the things that our company likes to do is be out in the community, and so this is a great place and way to do it this weekend.
I got to tell you, it's really wonderful to see not only the competitors, but the way the community kind of rallies around all of the ladies, all of the players. The hospitality, the professionalism. I'm not in any other city, so I don't go to too many other LPGA events, but I can't imagine that there's too many other places that these ladies would rather play than right here, given the way they've been treated and given the way the entire community rallies around this event.
This event has been hands down a great event throughout the years, and you know, Jed Silverman puts it on and has done a great job. It's a whole week event for the players. They come out and play in pro-ams, and they stay with host families, and they just become ingrained in the community.
Let's talk about that. You and I were talking, Mary Beck, about this a few minutes ago, that you actually host a couple of the golfers who are here playing. First of all, tell us, how does that happen? See, as I mentioned to you off the air, I really guess I never thought about it, but I just assumed that when tour players, whether it's PGA or LPGA or any of the other tour that's kind of what I thought. I didn't realize that people in communities like this, you know, welcome the players into their homes, and you've actually done that with tours.
Absolutely. You know, playing on a tour is very expensive for these golfers, and so if they're not making a lot of money, it's really important for them to find a way to cut costs, and so the LPGA reaches out to the different communities and finds host families, and so I was lucky enough last year to become a host family for two golfers. Last year, actually, we had three golfers. This year, our friend from Spain didn't make it over across the pond, but we have two golfers, Sydney Clanton and Carlin Beck, that are staying with us for the week, and we just welcome them as part of our family, and we come out and watch them play, and you know, it's a great support system for them.
Now, when you want to host a golfer, like if somebody else is hearing about this for the first time, how do you do that? Do you just call the LPGA or call the Marathon people and say, hey, we want to open our home to someone, or do you get put on a waiting list? Do you choose them like you are adopting a child? All right, let me see the list here. I'll take her and her. How does that happen?
You just reach out to the office here for the Marathon Classic and let them know that you're interested in hosting a family and or hosting a golfer, excuse me, and then they will do some vetting of the families, and as they end up assigning you golfers. And so last year we finally got assigned two golfers that happened to play together at Auburn, which was pretty cool. So one's from Alabama and one's from North Carolina.
Tell us about the other connection there. These two golfers who happen to play at Auburn, you actually have a connection to them without ever knowing it. This was totally random and coincidental.
Completely random. They were assigned to us, and my best friend from childhood, I grew up in Atlanta, she played golf at Auburn and then ended up coaching at Auburn, and she coached the two of them when they were players there. So, you know, we have this connection of friends and family, and so it's a lifetime friendship that we've developed.
And how does the interaction go, like, and particularly if you don't know who you're getting, like you said, you know, if you're assigned golfers, if you're assigned international golfers, you said they had one from Spain last year,
mm-hmm.
English-speaking or Spanish?
Yes.
Only?
Both.
Number of, obviously, international players, number of Asian players who are on the tour who are here today. Do you ever have any, or have you heard of anything where, you know, language barriers get in the way of that host relationship?
I think that most of the golfers nowadays have traveled so many places around the world that a lot of them, they overcome the language barrier, so I think it's pretty easy for the family to overcome that. We had a young lady that got in late. She got in the weekend of the tournament right before the tournament last year, and she happened to play with the other girls at Auburn, so they asked if she could stay, and she taught us some Spanish. It was fun.
That is very cool. Now, you also come from a golfing family yourself. You said,
yes.
You have experience with the tour. You had, was it your brother who was on the Hooters tour?
My brother played a little bit on the Hooters tour with Bubba Watson, and so I grew up at a country club in Atlanta, and I played a little bit back then, and I like to get out here some when I can, but it's not very often.
So now beyond hosting the golfers and obviously sponsoring our broadcast and other things, do you ever come out here, or have you come out here in the past just to be a member of the gallery and just kind of
absolutely
watch?
I come out here. I've lived in Toledo for 5 years, and I really try to ingrain myself in the community, which is one of the reasons why One Hour Heating and Air and Benjamin Franklin Plumbing wanted to get involved in this. Is it's such a great event that supports so many charities in the area. And so absolutely, I've come out every year for the past 5 years, and it's a great community day, especially on Friday, where all the business folks come out and have some fun over on hole 14. And so it's just a great way to get out of the office on a beautiful day like it is right now and support professional athletes and young women, and also the community of Toledo.
Mary Beck Gwynn is our guest. She is with Ben Franklin Plumbing, One Hour Heating and Air Conditioning. By the way, is One Hour Heating and Air Conditioning responsible for this tent that we're in right now?
I wish I could say yes, but we don't do commercial work, so only residential.
If people can hear, there's just a very, very huge air conditioner providing us with a comfortable area to broadcast from and all of the other media members to do their work. Mary Beck, your golfers, your two golfers that you're hosting, how are they doing? Are they playing well?
They both finished the day today at plus one. So the cut line right now is at plus one. We are keeping our fingers crossed that they'll stay with us the weekend, but we hope that they stay with us and we're out here every day.
Of course, yes. You do, yeah. And so you said you're cooking for them and you're welcoming them into your home as if they're family members, which I know they appreciate. You talked about home-cooked meals a little bit ago. When you're sitting down to dinner with two professional golfers who are here, do you talk shop? Are they talking about, you know, that missed putt on 13 and how that cost them a shot here and there? Or is it pretty much that's at the golf course and it's other stuff when you're at home?
The two that we have, they like to leave it on the golf course, and we kind of let them lead the conversation when it comes to that. You know, they played in the pro-ams this week, so we talk about the mutual people that played with or that we might know. And really, we just kind of, it's relaxed. One of them loves Jeopardy, so we play Jeopardy together. We played some card games the other night, and we really talk about life, and I think the best thing for us is because we have that mutual friend in common, so I kind of know their world, and so it's, you know, whatever they become our kids, you know, really. It's like, I feel like a mom out here, one teed off on one today, one teed off at 10 on 10 at the same time, so I had to try to spread myself across the course and, like, cheer them on.
I think you already answered it, but you had the same two plus another girl last year at the
yes.
same time, a lady, I should say.
Yes.
So will that be, like, as you stay a host family, will you always have them if they come back?
If they come back, they will stay with us.
And so do you?
Absolutely.
Some tournaments and wish them luck, et cetera?
Absolutely. We text throughout the year. I actually downloaded the LPGA app, and I have them saved as favorites. So I love every Thursday when my phone vibrates and it says, Carlin is teeing off or Sydney's teeing off, and I follow them throughout the weekends, and I track how they're doing. It's you know, they become part of our family.
And where do your kids head from here?
Our adopted kids, one is going home. Next week, the LPGA is actually doing some international events, and so Sydney's going home to North Carolina, and Carlin is going to go home to Alabama. And Sydney hadn't been home in a while. She actually made it into the U.S. Open this year. So she just traveled to us from California. So it's a good break for them.
Terrific. Well, thanks for taking us behind the scenes about how this whole thing works. That's it. I didn't even know about the hosting of people. Like I said, I just thought that they're at hotels and everything else. And it's so nice to know that they come here and they feel at home, literally. And I think that's one thing the entire community, Sylvania, Toledo, the entire area, just really makes them feel that way. And it's really, really good to know how much you guys do it at home. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Mary Beck Gwynn with us. She, again, is with Ben Franklin Plumbing and One Hour Heating and Air Conditioning, our sponsors who have brought our show here to the event for the first two rounds today. And obviously we're looking forward to seeing those two golfers as well as the rest of the ladies. As we've got live shows coming out here with 106.5 The Ticket over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, reports from Jim Cushlin as well. All right, it is 3:51. We'll take a timeout and get our Sports Center break here. Come right back, take some phone calls as well, 866-240-1065. Broadcasting live on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket from Highland Meadows in Sylvania at the Marathon Classic. Right back after this.
401065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
We are back as we continue on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket at Highland Meadows here in Sylvania. Brought to you by Ben Franklin Plumbing in 1 hour. heating and air conditioning. Really, really neat story. Fascinating behind-the-scenes look at the LPGA Tour. I really had never heard of any of the things that Mary Beck Gwynn just told us about hosting players and what life is like on the road. And I didn't realize it, too. Jim, when you think of professional athletes, I mean, obviously nobody's saying that these ladies, much like most of the pros, you know, Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy and Jason Day, you know, they're different. Obviously, at the top of the money lists, et cetera, they're not having any problems. But when you think of professional athletes and your exposure to them is usually at the NFL or NBA level and so on and so forth, you kind of tend to, at least I do, kind of tend to just lump everybody together and say they're making a ton of money. They're professionals. And Mary Beck and I were talking off the air about there are ladies on this tour who struggle to make ends meet, to buy the airfare, to go from point A to point B, to go from, you know, to get the equipment there or maybe to drive, depending on what their status is, where they stay. They can't afford hotels, so that's why they stay at host homes. And it's just kind of a neat look at it. Life on the road as a professional golfer, maybe the PBA bowlers, these kinds of people, it's not as luxurious as maybe people would have imagined it to be when you say that, hey, I'm on the professional tour.
Yeah, to a degree, that's true, because on the one hand, you know, you mentioned the plane, for example, and getting from the various tournaments, and you only got a couple days. I mean, we also think of travel as game tonight, and then a couple days off, and then another one. No, it's pretty much you're in somewhere for 4 or 5 days, and then you fly again or whatever to the next one, but it is true, and most people, when they hear how much a purse is, for example, for a whole tournament, they hear numbers like $5 million or what have you. No, that's spread around for almost everybody, depending on where you finish in the various tournaments. So you might only be getting $5,000 if you finish 36th or something like that, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I mean, I was actually talking to her about some of the purses on the tour and some of the, you know, amounts that some of the players that, again, use names you can't really remember because you've never heard of them. There's a reason why. They're young players or, you know, they're hangers-on. And, you know, somebody might have made $100,000 a year already. In this year already here through the month of July and be doing very well and able to go out there and enjoy themselves in various cities they go to, like, you know, Toledo and Northwest Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And others who are struggling and it made $25,000 to $30,000 through 7 months of golf. And guess what? That's before expenses.
Right.
And they come here to cities like this, and while some players go out and hang out with one another at the club, at the bar, at the restaurant, or shopping or what have you at various cities they go to when they're not at the course, others are, I'm staying in my hotel or I'm staying in my host family's bedroom because, quite frankly, I don't have the money to go out for drinks tonight, ladies. And so it's a real, you know, if you're finishing in the, you know, bottom half of the, you know, of the leaderboard, or not making the cut at all, it's a rough life sometimes that these folks live. And I just find it amazing, you know, to learn that sort of thing. I really enjoyed that conversation.
No, absolutely. And the best way, because, you know, no offense to anyone out there, but we don't really, pop in to check on what's going on in the LPGA all that often. The best way to compare this in terms of the struggles at times would be think of some of the money that minor league players, you know, your double-A guys, your single-A guys. That's kind of what we're talking here.
Yeah, that's a great comparison. That is a great comparison to talk about the young baseball players. Again, they're pros, but we don't see them as pros, do we? When we talk about Tigers, you know, the Detroit Tigers or the Cleveland Indians, we know what that is. Those are what we consider to be professional. It's almost like the Mudhens or the Clippers or whomever it is. That's not pro. That's pro, but it's kind of semi-pro. It's minor league pro, and we don't really think of it that way. But when you get into the double A and single A, you certainly don't see it that way because you know the checks aren't that big, and those guys are kind of struggling to get from, you know, from here to there, if you will.
Right.
And that's why, again, with golf, you don't. If you're on the PGA Tour, you are just assumed. It's assumed that you're doing it. You're killing it. If you're on the LPGA Tour, you're killing it. If you're not quite good enough and you're on the Hooters Tour or, you know, the Nike Tour or the other lesser tours that are kind of there for those who don't have their cards, you know, that's kind of more akin to the double A and single A major or baseball players.
Just something to keep in mind. Not everybody's making $10 million if they're playing a sport.
Exactly right. Tom Brady may have spent $10 million, by the way, on his defense that is now over. I'm curious, and we're going to ask this question in the next hour as well during the time we have. We do have a couple of guests to talk to as well, including Jim Heller, who is with the Marathon Classic. He'll join us in a few minutes to talk a little bit more about this tournament, about the tour itself. But Tom Brady gave up the fight. He's not going to go to the Supreme Court over the inflated football issue that he's been dealing with for 544 days, which is something I cannot even comprehend. So he's not giving up the fight. And the question we want to ask is, does this tarnish his legacy? His goal, I think, why did he spend the hundreds of thousands of dollars? I believe it's got to be in legal fees thus far. Not to mention how much the Players Association has spent defending himself against, you know, a four-game suspension, which isn't that huge in the grand scheme of things. But what it is, if he serves that suspension, it essentially is acknowledgement that he either cheated or, you know, allowed people to cheat for him, and that it might tarnish his legacy. He fought this hard to avoid having that happen. He wanted to be cleared fully by a court to tell the NFL, you guys are full of it, this is not real, so that his legacy isn't damaged. But now being forced to give up before it goes to the Supreme Court or gets rejected as an appeal by the Supreme Court, that's in play. And I'm curious to see how people feel about it. If you're especially, you know, not a particularly big Patriots or Tom Brady fan, does this tarnish the legacy? So let's end this hour there. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Jim Heller coming up, Rachel Lindsay of the Toledo Blade at about 4:35. We'll try to get your thoughts about that question as well as we continue live here at Highland Meadows. Brought to you by Ben Franklin Plumbing and 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning, live on ESPN 106.5. The team.
Here's the 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He chased the high heat, and JV gets his first strikeout. And again, the 1-2. Swing and a miss. He struck him out.
Best fastball of the afternoon thrown by Justin Verlander at 96 miles an hour.
Outstanding effort tonight for Justin Verlander. Swing and a miss. And Verlander will dust him for his third strikeout of the game. Only Mickey Lolich in the history of the Tigers has had 2,000 or more. Here's the 1-2. Swing and a miss.
There it is.
He struck him out. Strikeout number 2,000 in the career of Justin Verlander. Here's the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out to end the game. Carlos Carrasco with his third career shutout, his seventh career complete game. All of them have come on the road, and he was dominant here today.
Man, he pitched his heart out. I mean, that's a good lineup, and he really pitched well. Now that he's got some starts under him, man, he's got some repetition. You know, it's kind of nice because he doesn't have the wear and tear of, you know, some of the other guys.
Tom Brady will no longer proceed in the legal process in Deflategate. Announced on his Facebook page today that while he is grateful for the support from everyone, from Coach Belichick to the fans, the 18 months have been difficult and they are coming to an end. Brady wrote, "I'm going to work hard to be the best player I can be for the New England Patriots. And I look forward to having the opportunity to return to the field this fall." So what does this mean? The Cleveland Browns better watch out for the return of the GOAT on October 9th.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Bob France with you live here at Highland Meadows. We're getting ready to start a conversation with our friend Jim Heller here, who is the media chairman for the Marathon Classic. Our next guest, who's coming up after 4:30 or was scheduled to, Rachel Lindsay from The Blade just came over right as we were coming on the air and said, "Can I go early?" She's got to go and interview someone coming off the course here before 4:30. So we will do our best to accommodate her and bring her on the air when Jim Heller and I are done. We are live again here at Highland Meadows. The course we speak of is indeed Highland Meadows. I say that's the Department of Redundancy Department, I think. But we are brought to you by 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning and Ben Franklin Plumbing for the Marathon Classic. Jim Heller, so good to see you, my friend. You and I have gone back many, many years, and I want to say it's been at least 13 of them, I think, or
yes.
So,
yeah.
since we worked together
right
here in town. And It was so great to see you yesterday, and I wanted to bring you over and talk a little bit about what you're doing and about the Marathon Classic. How long have you been working with the Classic?
This is my second year as the media chairman, and yes, it is good to see you, my friend. You are ornery as ever and still living up to billing. When I found out that I was scheduled for the Bob France show, I thought, oh, my goodness, good times.
Yeah, indeed. And you know what? We've been having a good time since we've been here, Jim, and I've been saying this when I was well out of earshot of you, so I'm not saying this because you're sitting here, but really, you guys have done such a great job. I mean, I can only speak for myself personally, but I'm assuming everybody else is getting the same type of red carpet treatment as far as the media goes, the hospitality of the tournament, whether it's yourself as media chairman, the other individuals whose titles I don't know, but that I have met at so many stages of this thing in the last 2 days here, treating the fans, the gallery, the players, clients, and sponsors. I mean, this is a very first-class run organization.
Judge Silverman approached me 2 years ago, right in the middle of basketball season, when I had nothing going on, of course, and said, I've got a summer job for you. And I thought, oh, boy, this ought to be good. You want me to come out and rake sand traps or something? Did Mrs. McGillicuddy's cat leave a present out there, and you want me to come clean it up for you? Yeah. And he says, no. I need somebody who knows enough people in this town and can bring them all together, and you're up. And Judd Silverman's a guy that you don't say no to here in Toledo. So, yeah, it's been a lot of long hours.
Did he make you an offer you couldn't refuse?
Is that... Mr. France, it doesn't matter what a man does for a living.
Oh, yours was so much better than mine.
Thank you, buddy. For 39 cents, I'll do it. he basically said, look, you've been chewing a lot of dirt here. You pretty much know everybody. Can you get everybody in a room together? Sure, let's do it. And it's very exhausting. There's always problems and glitches. And, one minute it's the television, the next minute it's the print, the next minute it's the television again. I'm not going to say the radio because they never asked me for anything. But it's great to bring all these people together because they're all competitors. But we're all looking for the same thing this week, and that is to push the needle forward for this great tournament. And our credentials are up almost 30% since I started 2 years ago, so the recipe's working. And I think this is where you and I are in agreement. This is not just a Toledo tournament. This is a Northwest Ohio. This is a Southeast Michigan. This is a regional tournament. Yeah, there's a stop in Ann Arbor now. I get that. But this is something that is unique to this region. And not just the city of Toledo and the suburbs. Let's go out to Defiance, to Tiffin, to Findlay, to Sandusky. Let's bring them all in. All these people play golf. The best in the world are going to be here within an hour's drive. Why not come here?
Yeah, I was talking to one of the volunteers who was driving the shuttle from the media parking all the way over here to the clubhouse area yesterday. And, he's a retiree, as most volunteers are.
He said
we're either retirees, most of us, or students. A lot of students come here and volunteer. Some of them need service hours for their schools or whatever the case might be. Or they're just bored, or they just really like the idea of being around golf. Anyway, he was saying to me, people literally not only come here, these aren't just all Sylvania or Toledo residents who are coming here and doing this. He said people come from out of state to volunteer at this event.
Yeah.
And that lets you know what a real, truly regional event that it is. It's not just hyper-local.
Well, and the thing about that is this has become so much more than a golf tournament. You had Urban Meyer, who brought a throng of Ohio State faithful with him. You have the NBA championship trophy.
The Larry O'Brien trophy.
I noticed when it arrived, my God, those look like Bob France's thumbprints. He get his hands under the head of everybody. You have that. You have the caddy races on 14. You've got the kids zone. You've got the party tent. This has become almost a social gathering where Royal Troon meets Happy Gilmore. Just a touch of it, mind you. And really, well, the one thing that Judd's done a very good job as, my hat's off to Judd Silverman and Jim Decker, because this has been their baby for 30 years. And I told them this when I came on board. The golf people, the people that are into golf are going to show up anyway. Okay, what you need to do is start marketing to the people that aren't into golf. Maybe they have young children, and maybe they don't have a whole lot of money to go on vacation. Make the price affordable for people to come out here on a day and then watch the best players in the world. In other words, start targeting the non-golfers, and I think the message is starting to resonate.
That is a great idea, and that's why you've been so successful, I know, and just about everything you've done, because you've targeted it. And that's, I think, I don't think that's... exclusive to the classic nor the LPGA Tour, because that's one thing that golf has continued to try to do in the decline of Tiger.
Yes.
You know, we talk about this, Kushlin and I do all the time, about how less interested so many casual golf fans are in right now the British Open or the U.S. Open or anything else. Well, Tiger's not there.
Right.
That's only the second time all week you've mentioned the words British Open.
That's a great point, and you know, we didn't really talk too much about the U.S. Open because a lot of people are just casual golf fans. They were brought in by that magnetic personality,
yes.
And even though his personality is actually kind of gruff, his persona, maybe more than his personality, and the chase for records and so on and so forth, since he has declined, golf is trying to find what's the new way to bring in casual golf fans or not, you know, real diehard golf fans. Fortunately for them, you know, Jordan Spieth has risen, Jason Day, and obviously Rory McIlroy, this kind of new foursome or group of young stars.
Ricky Fowler got to throw him in there.
Absolutely. So I get it. I mean, and you're right, and that's got to work at all of these levels. You've got to find a way to bring people who aren't really diehards and get them inside the tent, if you will, not literally, but get them in here to experience it. And then maybe they won't be relying on one player or personality or something to draw them. It's the experience that draws them.
Well, and the other thing is a little competition brings out the best in everybody. And if you look at our leaderboard right now, Lydia Ko, number one player in the world at 8 under par, Hyo-Joo Kim, who is just a youngster compared to Lydia Ko, tied with her at 8 under. And if you look down to Hana Zhang, who is at 7 under, also from Korea, that's the young lady who lost the playoff a year ago. And when I was talking to some of our other media colleagues, they looked at me on Sunday and said, who's your favorite to win it? She right now was one stroke off the lead. And believe me, losing that playoff lit a fire underneath that young lady. And that's who my favorite is here to win all this. But the other thing, and this goes back to exactly what you were talking about and to Jim's point, I think the problem with the British Open is it starts at 4 o'clock in the morning. Who in their right mind during the week is up at 4 o'clock in the morning? Not many people.
Not many people, but you know as well as I do, if somebody is going for history, if Jordan Spieth is trying to complete the slam.
Yes.
Or Tiger is trying to win number 16, and I know he's at 14, but my point being, closer to Jack, people are going to watch. You know, those are the kinds of storylines it takes to get people to watch. And again, without those kind of storylines, you know, it's harder. You got to find another way to market.
And the perfect example of that, and this kind of ties into your discussion, and I'll never forget it for as long as I live. You saw it, I saw it. 1994, Arnold Palmer walking down the U.S. Open for the very last time. We're seeing a legend say goodbye to competitive golf, and what does that get bumped for? The Bronco Chase with O.J. Simpson
and Al Collins. That's
all right.
Right.
So that was what was set up to be a monumental moment of golf that got sent to Page Six because of a white Bronco.
Jim Heller is the media chairman at the Marathon Classic, doing an outstanding job, literally, for all of us. As you mentioned, Jim, you know, all these people in here are competitors, but they're all doing, you know, the same job, and they know what it is. And outside of that fight between the Channel 11, Channel 13 cameramen that we saw outside there, everything else has been very, very calm.
I told him to lead with the left, but nobody listens to me anymore.
I'm looking at that leaderboard you just mentioned here real quick, and it's interesting in the top 10. Oh, wait a minute. It just changed a little bit. I was about to say, I see 3 Korean flags and 3 American flags, actually 4 now. Allison Lili Lopez, Stacey Lewis, and Vicky Hurst, 4 Americans in the top 10 at this point. And when we say top 10, it's actually 1 through 7 due to all of the ties.
And, of course, Stacey Lewis, being born in Toledo, Ohio, has a huge following here this weekend.
And she's right there at -5 right now finished on the day. She was -5. Overall, she was -3 on the day today. I wanted to clarify that. So she would be 3 off the lead going into Saturday. Is the cut still at +1 right now?
It's kind of looking that way. If anything, it might drop to even.
Okay. Well, let's hope it stays there, because we were just talking to Mary Beck Wynn, who is hosting 2 golfers, both who finished their day today at +1 on the tournament. So
she's in it that. Just to get the golf balls. Let's not get ourselves.
Well, Jim, listen, it's a great event, and it's really great to catch up with you. And so when you're not doing, you know, Marathon Classic duties and doing the summer job and raking the sand traps,
yes, sir.
Where else do we find you now?
And, of course, I'm going to sit
besides
down.
Besides playing golf.
Not very well, I might add. certainly the possibility of looking at another season of University of Toledo football and University of Toledo women's basketball.
Toledo football should be a really, really fun season. They've got, for the first time, and I saw the press release earlier today, eight different players are on watch lists for individual awards.
Yeah, and ironically, the new head coach and the star running back from over in your neck of the woods, Jason Candle, a native of Northeast Ohio.
Indeed.
And, of course, Kareem Hunt out of Willoughby South, a legitimate Heisman Trophy contender. If he can stay healthy, that's
right.
A big if. It certainly could be.
But he's on the preseason Doak Walker watch list.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, that just got announced. He has the opportunity to make a good season. And now this is Jason Candle's baby. He now has the keys to the engine. Matt Campbell's gone to Iowa State and Cargill seats. Okay, he's not here anymore. So, we can see here if the line of succession is going to continue. I certainly hope it does, but I want to thank you. And my friends over at Cumulus Media for making this tournament such an important part of your programming. I'm grateful to you and to Mike Miller, who will be on afterwards.
Mike's been here all week and just done a fantastic job, as always. No, but, Jim, the feeling is mutual. I mean, we wouldn't really not want to be here. You guys do a great – I mean, it's obviously great for Northwest Ohio. It's great for Southeast Michigan. It's great for the region, as you pointed it out. And we're all kind of part of that. We're all trying to make sure that we grow, the sporting footprint, if you will, expand our brands, if you will, as a community and as a region. So we would not want to be here, and you guys make it so hospitable for us. So we thank you so much for inviting us and treating us so well.
Yeah, we're all one team this week, my friend. Always a pleasure and great to see you after all these years.
Thank you, my friend. Jim Heller is the immediate chairman for the Classic and, again, just continues to do yeoman's duty to make things easy on us media folk out here at Highland Meadows. All right, it is 4:21. We're going to get an early timeout here because we've got Rachel Lindsay standing by. She wants to come over and join us a little earlier than our original plan because she's got to get out to the course and do some interviews with golfers as they come off of the course. So we'll take a time out here, Jim. We'll come back and talk to Rachel Lindsay coming up right after this as we continue live at the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows. The Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza brought here by our great friends at Ben Franklin Plumbing and, of course, 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning. Right back after this.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, we are right back with you at Highland Meadows here in Sylvania for the Marathon Classic. Round number 2 is not only underway, it is finished for a lot of the golfers. And Rachel Lindsay is covering the tournament for the Toledo Blade. And she's coming on a little bit earlier than we expected her because she's got to go and actually talk to one of these golfers as they come off of the course here in this late afternoon. And, Rachel, first of all, great to see you. Thank you for coming by our little broadcast location here.
Thank you for having me on this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciated talking with you yesterday. And, for those who don't know, we've had you on throughout the course, last football season a number of times talking about Michigan football because you're on the beat for the Wolverines, football and basketball. And, and as we talked yesterday, Rachel, about your role with the Blade as a beat reporter, it kind of struck me that's not a very common thing. Female beat reporters or writers, beat writers or reporters, either broadcast media or print media. And you mentioned something to me that there are only 5 of you female beat writers in the entire Big Ten.
I kind of took an informal head count at some of the print aspect.
We also
take in consideration digital. We've got TV reporters as well. You're seeing more women overall, but in print it's very, very unusual. And print is an ever-changing medium as well. We're trying to reflect with deadlines. We're trying to do digital, but I'm on the board of the Association of Women in Sports Media, and that's one thing we always try to talk about.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I'm vice president.
Had I known that, this would have been a much more natural conversation. I mean, it just hit me in the head when you said that yesterday. I said, I want to talk to Rachel about that. What's it like to be, standing out literally in a field of almost all men, standing out as one of a very, very few number of female beat writers, and I didn't realize you had a title that basically addresses that very issue.
And that's one thing we talk about with the Association for Women in Sports Media. We try to impress upon other outlets. It's like, it's not just about putting more women, it's bringing more diversity, it's bringing more perspectives of thought, perspectives of backgrounds, we invite men in our organization as well. My husband is actually a member of the organization. And, you know, we really talk about, we want these different perspectives. We want different backgrounds. We want people to say, you know, oh, I remember covering this when I was doing this in a small paper, and I was able to bring that experience to a bigger paper, to a bigger beat. And, you know, one thing we say over and over is like, you know, yeah, hire someone a little different from you. Hire someone who has that perspective. Hire someone who can make the readers think. About 15 years ago, I was at the Associated Press Sports Editors Convention in Baltimore, Maryland, and Dan Le Batard spoke there. I mean, he's a columnist at the Miami Herald, you know, Cuban-born guy, raised in Miami, and he said that exact same thing. He said, a room full of sports editors, hire someone who scares you. Hire someone who thinks a little differently and causes you to think a little differently. And it really, really enriches a newsroom, an outlet, you know, a radio show or whatnot. As people will say, hey, I thought a little differently about that. You know, you can't change people, but yeah, you can make them think a little differently by saying, I never thought of that before.
Do you, Rachel Lindsay is my guest. She's with the Toledo Blade, obviously. She's here covering the Classic at Highland Meadows, but she also covers Michigan football. Being in our business, you get people who like what you do, and you get people who hate what you do. I get emails from people who say, love your show, don't miss, I never miss it. Others saying, you're an idiot, you suck, you should never be on the air again. Do you get anybody who gives you that because you're a woman? What do you know about football? After you write something about Jim Harbaugh or a game or whatever, do you ever get any of the haters? Don't get the game, lady.
We all do. You don't get the game. I remember a couple years ago when I was covering the Red Wings, Justin Abeltaker had hit that. He put that massive hit on one of the Anaheim Mighty Ducks, and I put on my Twitter account, you know, this is a violent, dangerous hit. He will be penalized for it. And I'd written that in our web dummy as well, and someone wrote back, what the heck do you know about a violent, dangerous hit? And I was like, hey, I've been watching hockey since I was 11 years old. And then within minutes, Brendan Shanahan, who at the time was, you know, the disciplinarian for NHL, came out and said, this was a violent, dangerous hit by Justin Abeltaker. And I said, oh, gee.
Same exact wording.
I said, I could do Brendan Shanahan's job. You know, but it was one of those things where it's like, yes, you know, people will always question us because, you know, not just women, but people in the media, because we have a platform. We have our names out there. We put ourselves out there every day. You know, and we're the messengers, but what do they say? They shoot the messenger, don't they? So you have to develop, you know, a thicker skin to do that. You kind of got to figure out what to brush off.
But do you feel like you have to develop an even thicker one being a female in a male-dominated sport?
It depends. It depends, you know, where
it's like for me, I mean, and I've been doing this for almost 20 years. I accept that people are going to sling the arrows and barbs my way just because I give my opinion for a living. This is what I do for a living. I watch, I study, I research, and then this is what I think about it. And guess what? Everybody's got an opinion, and most of them aren't going to agree with yours. And
right.
So I expect that. But I'm just a dude giving my opinion. You're a girl in a dude's world.
A woman in a dude's world.
You understand my point? I'm sorry. I didn't mean. But you are.
You think I'm
you're
that
a
young,
female.
Though.
Well, you're a female in a male-dominated sphere, particularly, again, when you're talking. And with the growth of women's basketball through UConn and, of course, you know, Tennessee and the late Pat Summitt and some of the, maybe covering Michigan basketball, maybe doesn't get you quite as many looks and, like, you know, why are you here? But covering football, it's still, even in 2016, got to be a little tougher. You have to probably have thicker skin to do what you do than I do.
You have to work hard. You have to put yourself out there. And this is a universal thing as well. You have to ask the right questions. You have to prepare. You know, I look at just some other people, you know, regardless of gender or race or, you know, background, and think, you know, God, you know, did you just roll out of bed and show up here? You know, we could never do that as women, you know. I always say, professionally, presentation is important for everybody, but it's like, yeah, you know, you just have to prepare a little better, you have to work harder, you have to know how to be persuasive, you have to know how to work your sources, you know, keep your sources happy, and reach out to people as well. And one thing I tell people, you know, especially the women that go on Instagram, like, go back to the fundamentals, go back to being good journalists, to being responsible, to treating people fairly, you know. And that's how you will build your reputation, is by doing the right things instead of doing the popular and easy thing.
Does it bother you, Rachel, that you have to work a little harder? I think is one of the things you said, prepare a little more as a female than maybe a man does, that you have to work on your appearance, that you have to do things that a guy doesn't have to do. He can roll out of bed and go interview guys. You know what I mean? All that stuff you would think would be kind of sucks, you know. Maybe some people might be resentful. Kind of sucks. I have to do things, you know, make things more difficult for myself simply because of my sex.
You know, I think back of a story when I was on the debate team in high school, and I remember I showed up to one of the public speaking competitions just, you know, just looking like I was going to go to a party and not to a professional event.
Right.
You know, these were people who, you know, very intelligent, very cerebral people. And my mom pulled me aside and she's like, "Don't ever wear that out to a job interview, to a debate function, to this," and she's like, "because Those aren't parties. Those are things that you have, you're professionally presenting yourself. So I was kind of embedded with that in an early age as well. That's something I tell men and women alike. I'm like, guys, you work for X thing. Don't look like you're going to a frat party. You know, it's something I tell everybody. But, you know, and having to work hard, you know, from my family background, that was something was always embedded in us. You know, my dad was a labor lawyer for years and years and was a teacher. My mom was an elementary school principal. And they're like, we didn't get here by eating bonbons and watching television. You have to work and work and work, you know, not just to get there, but to stay strong. You know, one thing we see in journalism is attrition with men and women, you know, who leave the industry. It's a high-risk, low-reward profession, you know. And it says a lot about perseverance. I mean, I look at Angelique Shangelis up at the Detroit News. She's been doing this probably as long as I've been alive. And, you know, she just worked and worked and worked and persisted and persisted and persisted. She developed great sources. She's become a wonderful, wonderful role model. Not just for women, you know, for men and women in the industry as well. You know, you want to look at her and say, you know, this is what you need to do to be successful and to have longevity in this. We don't see a lot of longevity anymore.
No, that's very, very true, Rachel. Rachel Lindsay is my guest. I don't want to keep you too much longer because I don't know when your player's getting off the court, so you have to interview. But just a couple more. When you do, Rachel Lindsay from the Toledo Blade, we're here at Highland Meadows. If you just turn your radio on at the Marathon Classic, obviously. Excuse me. But, again, sticking with your what's the word I'm looking for? Abnormal isn't the right word, but the unusual, unique position as a female beat writer in the Big Ten, and we got to think about how many news organizations there are that cover each Big Ten school. So that for only five to exist in terms of print media in that huge conference is really an amazing thing. So it's from that angle that I want to ask this question. When you interview guys through your job covering Michigan football, for example, compare it to interviewing female athletes here at the LPGA event or anywhere else. Do you sense any different way that you're looked at or treated or approached from men versus women at their sport?
I think it depends more on the athlete himself or herself. You know, I think maybe with the women there's a little bit more of a, oh, you know, someone kind of gets what I'm going through personally. You know, with the men you find there's a little bit more respect. One time I was up in Michigan and one of the players started cussing outside the building. The other one said, whoa, there's a lady here. You need to calm down. You know, and, you know, some of the players...
How does that make you feel?
When I see the chivalry?
Yeah.
I think it's good. I think more people need to
see, now that's a fascinating thing to me, because...
It's politeness.
Politeness and it's manners, and there's a lady present. However, do you want to be seen as a lady here? It's like, wait a minute. Just do what you do. Do your thing. I'm here to cover you like that guy over there is. I don't see you saying don't swear because that guy from the Detroit News is over there. Why are you changing your behavior because of me? I mean,
I
can see the appreciation, but I could also see wait a minute. Don't treat me differently.
I took it as respect. The fact that someone did not want to swear in front of me.
Sure.
I took that just as very, very respectful. Like, okay, this guy gets it. But, you know, another thing, we work with a lot of the athletes, especially in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are given media training. They're told, you know, say this, don't say that. Sometimes don't say anything. Say a lot, but say nothing. And they're all, you know, one thing that I think is very, very good, they're all taught how to deal a certain way with the media, you know, how to interact with people. You know, it's like you can show your personality, but, you know, don't embarrass yourself, which is a good thing. It's something everybody needs to do. You know,
It is.
It's very universal advice. And that's one thing, you know, these men and women who are in major college athletics, they're getting those life lessons. You know, they're 21, 22, don't realize at the time, but when they go into a job interview, when they go in to meet their future wife or future husband's parents, they have to conduct themselves similarly. You know, they can't, you know, first impressions are everything, I guess.
Sure,
well,
sure.
Yeah.
No, I think that's very, very true. I just think that's a really fantastic answer that you gave, though. I mean, just, you know, yeah, I respect it. I respect that I was respected enough to not have somebody swear in front of me. But like I said, I know there are females who would say, no, don't treat me differently. If you wouldn't do that ordinarily if a guy reporter was here, I'm a reporter.
Right.
Not a female reporter, I'm a reporter. Last thing, and we'll let you run because I know you got to get out there. Females in the broadcast medium from a football perspective. I have to admit this. This is a little bit of a strange bias. I have heard male announcers for my entire life calling football games. When I hear a female, and it's even more rare than the beat writer position you're talking about, calling the game and talking about the blitz or talking about that block or talking about this scheme or talking about down and distance and what might happen here, it still sounds strange to me. And I'm a guy that I've got a sophomore daughter, who's an athlete who, by the way, was on Speech and Debate last year.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So I know exactly what you meant. And she was prepared. We had to buy her a suit. But I want her to do whatever she wants to do. And if she wants to pursue this, I'm going to be in her corner the whole way. So believe me, I'm not trying. But in reality, if I hear a female calling a game in a football game, it strikes me as odd. And does she really get this? Because I know you never played this. Do you really get this? Do you see a difference there between writing and broadcasting from that vantage?
Not really, which goes back to, you have to prepare yourself. You have to present yourself well. You have to do that. And, yes, it is very different to see a woman's byline, to see a woman on the sidelines. You know, Jessica Mendoza, who's doing Sunday Night Baseball, who does a fantastic job. You know, Susie Colbert, another one, you know, does a fantastic job.
She does.
She's going to be speaking in Miami at our awesome convention in a couple weeks. You know, it's different to people. Kind of rattle people a little bit, but you know, just keep doing it, just keep proving yourself, keep showing up, keep being smart, keep being professional, and we'll do that. And that's one thing we also tell hiring managers, it's like, give people a chance too. Most important thing to do, just give them a chance. If you don't like it, you don't like it. Everybody has an opinion, but you know, just give a chance. Give us respect. That's all we ask.
Well, that's why when we reached out to you last year early in the football season, you know, I had never talked to you. Gave you a chance. Let's see what Rachel can tell us. And we called you back. And we called you back again. So guess what?
I guess I made a good impression.
You did. And then, honestly, and we'll, of course, continue to do that. And that's great advice, obviously, is just, you know, study and work hard and do it right. And the people aren't going to care what you are. I didn't care that you're a female. We don't bring you on as a novelty. We bring you on because you're covering the Wolverines. and you got the stories and you got the inside stories. Stuff and you can present it well, and that's why we like to have you on. So
thank you, Bob. I really appreciate us having this conversation. I appreciate the time. You know, if your daughter ever has questions about sports journalism, have her give me a call or drop me an email or something.
I will certainly do that. By the way, when is Big Ten Media Day?
Big Ten Media Day is a week from next Monday.
Got it. So it's about 10 days or so.
10 days, yeah.
Okay, good. So after that, maybe we'll have you back on again. We'll talk a little bit about, you know, what you learned up there talking to, you know, to some of the coaches. And
what things Jim Harbaugh will
do. I was going to say, what Coach Harbaugh has done to tick off every other coach in the Big Ten.
It'll be fine.
No doubt about it. Rachel,
right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Go get your golfer interview. Right. I know you're chomping at the bit to get out there.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
You got it. All right, there's Rachel Lindsay from the Toledo Blade live here at the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows. She does a really, really terrific job, and I really appreciate everything that she just laid out. It's a Cush, and I don't know if you're working phones or if you're still there, but do you agree with what I was saying to her, that when I read, and maybe this is just as the years have gone by, we've seen a little bit more of it, even though we were just talking about the rarity when it comes to female beat writers for the Big Ten. When I see a female byline on a sports page, I don't really blink. I don't really notice it anymore. But if I hear a female voice calling a football game, very specifically football, not so much basketball, even if it's men's basketball, but football, because it is such, it's just a man's domain. It just has been. And until there is the first female that breaks that barrier to play at the NFL level, it always will be. Whereas females are already playing basketball at an extraordinarily high level. And a number of other sports, of course, here at the Marathon Classic, playing golf, whether it be Olympic sports or so on. But when I hear a female voice calling a football game, I can't help but admit that I have a bit of an implicit bias. It's internal. It's not intentional. It's, wait a minute, this sounds foreign. It doesn't sound right. Does this person know what she's talking about? And I don't mean the sideline reporter. I don't mean the Aaron Andrews and Susie Colbert and others who have, made their living on that sideline. I'm talking about play-by-play or color commentary. Does it still strike you as weird when you hear a female voice doing that very much male, forever-dominated job?
It does a little bit. You know, sad for me to have to admit, but it does a little bit. But I, like you, when it comes to articles or something like that, whether in actual print or online, I'll be actually straight up honest. Whether print or actual online, I almost never read the bylines until I'm done with the article. And if I really liked it, I check to see who wrote it. Honestly, I do it backwards that way. But yeah, you know what? Now that you're making me think about it, and you get this more with college football, you know, in the fall,
yes,
because there's so many networks now that have TV rights, and there's so many games all over the place.
There, and, And aren't there females who call MAC games? That's kind of what I'm talking about. I mean,
yeah, I believe so.
More so than, you know, calling an Alabama Tennessee sure. showdown in the SEC, you're going to have, and of course they have the SEC network. That might have been a bad example, but the point being, maybe Big Ten too. I got to think about a Big Ten network who all the play by play. It's they're there. Females in that role, but they are still very, very rare. There is a very small number of them, which is perhaps why it's still foreign to us. It still sounds odd just because it's not, we're not used to it.
Yeah.
With the byline, like you said, you either don't look at it until you're done, or if you find somebody you like and you realize you recognize their writing, they're recognized
right.
and like their writing style, then you look for their stories and you want to read them again. But in broadcasting, particularly when it's football, man, it is still such a strange thing to hear a woman's voice calling a game and describing something, you know, football related. That to me, until there's a ton of them, it's still going to look and sound weird to me.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you on that. I never really thought about it, but now that you asked me the question, yeah, it kind of still feels weird. You know, if I'm on a random Saturday flipping through all the games, all the channels, and that'll stick with me in my ear. And I don't think it makes me a bad person necessarily, but I still notice that sometimes.
It doesn't make us a bad people. It really doesn't. But I mean, I do recognize and acknowledge there is a bias in it. It doesn't make us sound great either to say that, you know, hey, because we're not saying, I guess,
no,
you know,
we're not saying you shouldn't
be allowed to do it.
Right, that's
just
not what we're saying at all here.
It doesn't necessarily sound right. And I know that sounds mean to say it doesn't sound right if a woman's calling a game, but bottom line is, again, very, 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 very few women have ever played this game. Other than maybe being a high school place kicker because they're a soccer player and they come in and kick extra points. And certainly not very much at the college level, a very small handful, and none ever at the pro level beyond, what do they call that league, the lingerie league or whatever it's called. It just doesn't ring right to me. But it was just a fascinating conversation because Rachel being one of a very, very few who write as a beat writer for the Big Ten. In the Big Ten, it's something we ought to look at.
It's actually worked out interestingly perfect, Bob. I mean, what better kind of days to talk about this than when we're here at the LPGA Marathon Classic?
Well, that's why I brought her over. You know, when she came over yesterday and we were just chit-chatting, and she mentioned something about the Big Ten Media Days coming up. Excuse me. Which again is from this coming Monday. Made me think to myself, you know, you're the only female that I have on, and I don't know how it came up that I said to her, or if I was the one who brought it up, how many of you are there? But she said, yeah, there's only five in the entire Big Ten. Think about the number of schools times the number of media outlets that cover them and have a beat writer or a reporter assigned to them. To only have five females is a really staggering thing.
No,
that's why I wanted to talk
about
it. No,
good call, because you could just think around here locally. You know, Columbus, Cleveland's, and Toledo's, we all have beat writers from their various papers. And that's just for Ohio State. It's probably the same with every other Big Ten team. So take each team and times by five, and that's
right.
How many at minimum guys there would be following that beat for that team. So then you just start doing the math from there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's why I thought it was interesting to talk about it, kind of address it from a fair point of view, from a guy who doesn't necessarily like listening to females, or I'm not used to listening to females call football. Which is why we brought it up. All right. Let's get a timeout here. It's 4:45. That means we have got one segment left before Mike Miller takes over here at the Highland Meadows here in Sylvania at the Marathon Classic. So we'll get a Sports Center here. We'll come back and address a couple of things regarding Tom Brady and the news today. Von Miller, some more of the news today. J.J. Redick in a basketball news story, basically going after the commissioner. What? Yeah, J.J. Redick telling the commissioner that he's dead wrong about a big controversial issue in the National Basketball Association right now. So we'll try to cover all of that stuff before we're done. Thank you so much once again to Ben Franklin Plumbing and 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning for bringing the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza out here to Highland Meadows to broadcast live from the Marathon Classic on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I scared you again, didn't I?
Yeah. You scared me and you blew my eardrums right out of my head through this headset. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I had to make sure you could hear me through the AC in the back there.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's what it was. Right. Because you hadn't been doing that
covered
for the last,
tracks perfectly.
For the last 2 years. Oh, my gosh. Jim Cushlin, once again, waking me up in case I happen to be dozing during a sports center or a commercial break or anything else, by letting me know that my mic is. Turn your radio down right now because I'm about to shout into it like Jim Cushlin just did to mine. Hot! I just scared everybody here in the media center. Here in Highland Meadows, everybody in this entire room is looking at me right now because I just did my Jim Cushlin hot impersonation. Oh, my goodness. Apologies, everybody. That was directed to the airwaves, not to you. All right. Where was I? Oh, yeah. I was just looking, Jim Cushlin, at the timeline as we wrap up the program from Highland Meadows at the Marathon. By the way, Jim, before I wrap and do anything else about this, regarding the Marathon Classic here at Highland Meadows, we do have live shows here tomorrow, and you're going to be out here on Sunday, correct?
Actually, I'm going to be out here tomorrow. Sunday, all afternoon with your leaderboard updates. We'll be here on the ticket, and the other sister stations are going to be picking up on those. And then, as you mentioned, yeah, Great Lake Golf today with Mike Jamison tomorrow morning live from right where you're sitting in the media tent, and then Cheap Seats Mick Gonzalez on Sunday morning. So they'll all be live out this weekend and reports all the way through on Saturday and Sunday.
Excellent. It's going to be great coverage, obviously, right here on ESPN 106.5, the ticket of the Classic. And thank you once again to Ben Franklin Plumbing and One Hour Heating and Air Conditioning for having the extravaganza out here. Jim, I want to wrap it up with a couple of the other big stories we didn't get a chance to talk about today, as we talked a lot of baseball, we talked a lot of golf, and we talked a lot about sex in sports reporting, gender is what I'm trying to say, with Rachel Lindsay. Tom Brady and the giving up of the appeal for his Deflategate four-game suspension that was reinstated after he originally had it lifted today. I'm just looking at the timeline. It's like War and Peace, okay? I'm serious. I was just about to tweet that, actually, during the...
I can't believe we're still talking about this to a certain degree.
That's the point. That's the point. You know, it's funny, Jim. We had Zach Meisel on in the first segment of the program at 3:10 or so today. And prior to him coming on, I said, hey, Zach, I said, do you have any thoughts on the Brady thing? You know, we're going to do a baseball conversation because the second half of the season starts tonight with the Tigers hosting the Royals and the Indians up visiting the Twins. And I said, you know, we're going to do baseball. This is a football story, but thoughts on Brady and giving up this thing. And he said to me, I have not paid attention to that for almost a calendar year. And you know what? Because it's been, 18 months?
Yep.
It's been a year and a half. He said he lost interest in it so long ago, and it was so unimportant and so surreal that he just stopped giving it attention because people gave it too much attention. And I texted him back at the time, you are smart. He's very smart to have kind of avoided and ignored this, because it is impossible that it has lasted 544 days from the start of the investigation after the allegations to him giving up his appeal today. It's just, it's incomprehensible.
It is. I really can't believe that we so many of us have been on this subject, you know, for so long, but that's because it involves a very, very high profile in Brady. But I hope this is like the last time we have to talk about it. I mean, seriously. And look, it was mentioned in the clips I played in the opening montage, and he'll return from his suspension because, of course, just in time to throttle the Browns, something along the Bears Saturday Night Live skit of Patriots 72, Browns nothing, something in that neighborhood. And by the way, am I the only one, and I had to include that in the montage, am I the only one that you know, scratch their head when you refer to Tom Brady? And I know we're about out of time. I'm about to hit the buttons here. Maybe this is a conversation we can have another time. I'm not sure if I would say that Tom Brady is the GOAT, exactly. And by the way, pet peeve, I still hate that term being used as shorthand for greatest of all time. Why, when I was a boy, GOAT meant you blew it. Okay? That's always been my honest to God, Bob, that has always been my pet peeve ever since with LeBron and others were referring to it as the GOAT. I hate that. I was raised that GOAT meant you blew it, but is Tom Brady really the GOAT in football? I'm not so sure about that.
To your point, yes, the GOAT used to mean, if you're wearing the GOAT horns, that means you are the one who blew the game for your team. So you're right. That is a very strange way to refer to greatest of all time. However, we are in the texting world. We are in, you know, everything is shorthand. BRB. People say BRB. You know what I mean? People say BRB instead of be right back because that's what you text people. People say my wife and daughter do TBH, to be honest. I mean, we're just in an acronym shorthand society. That's one thing. But I get your point on it. And second of all, Tom Brady has very, very, very much made a strong case that he is indeed. It is a conversation for another day. That day is probably when he hangs them up for good, and we see exactly where his numbers and his achievements lie. For now, he can already make a strong case with Joe Montana and anybody else who's ever thrown that he is. I'm not saying he is yet, but he can make a very strong case, and that conversation will be had on a day after he announces his retirement. All right, that's it. Good stuff. I hear the music playing. Thank you once again to the great hosts here at the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows, including Jim Heller, Judd Silverman as well. Who else was out here helping us? Mr. Decker. And thanks to Mike Miller, by the way, for helping us out as well, for setting things up here at Highland Meadows. Really enjoyed the time. And thanks again to our sponsors, Ben Franklin Plumbing and 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning. I'm back again on Monday for the next extravaganza. Make sure you stay right here because Mike Miller continues from Highland Meadows right after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.